Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Kinda Funny XCast, your home for all things Xbox here at Kinda Funny. Of course, I'm one of your show hosts, Snowbite Mike, and today I am joined by one of my gaming dads, Mr. Paris Lilly, and a very special guest. Paris, I'll start with you. What's good, homie? How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I've been roaming the Appalachian wasteland. It's been good.
With NPCs now as well, Paris.
Oh, yeah.
Well, people to talk to.
Yeah. I got some stories.
All right, good. I will hold your stories until we get into the show because I am excited to hear what you think of Fallout 76. I've seen some rankings lately online and a lot of disrespect thrown at Fallout 76. Nobody's given any love to that game, so I want to hear what you think. But of course, we got a special guest. It's my guy, Khalif Adams from Spawn On Me. Khalif, what's good?
Fam, I'm so excited to be here rocking with y'all. It always feels good. I always get jealous of the intro because the intro is so good and sexy. Comes in, makes you feel all important and cool, but excited to be here rocking with y'all as always.
Excited to have you. You know that couldn't have a good episode without you and Paris together, and I was like, you know what, let's just link up, let's get all together, because we got NBA playoffs going on, and you're my basketball guys, which is always easy to start the episode and get it flowing with, and then just talk about life. But Khalif, what have you been up to lately? Of course, you had the Spawnies. I've been catching the Spawn On Me podcast. What else has been going on?
I mean, I've been deep into the NBA season. I mean, my Knicks are finally back in a place of prominence. We are the second seed in the NBA playoffs. We are no longer the laughingstock of the league. We are higher than the Lakers, and we are higher than the Warriors. We are higher than so many other teams in terms of seeding. I'm not going to say in terms of chips or in-season tournament banners hung in our arenas.
That will never be hung up in crypto.com/the Staples Center ever.
But excited and playing a ton of games, playing a bunch of stuff, all embargoed and non-embargoed stuff, and just having a blast. It feels like summer is right around the corner, which also feels great. So a lot of love in the world right now.
Good. I love hearing that. And you saw him take a couple shots at you, Paris Lilly, about your LA Lakers, but they got the dub, they're moving on. So, Paris still got a chance out there, Khalif, just so he's still got a chance.
So I want to circle back that he tried to throw the in-season tournament in my face. Like that's something the Los Angeles Lakers would ever put up in their arena. The New York Knicks wishes they had an in-season tournament banner to hang up, because they haven't had anything to hang up since 1973. Don't you forget that. See, I know my history.
Wow, he hit with the dates. That's crazy.
That's reasonable. There is no comeback for that because it's absolutely true. It's 1,000% right. He's not wrong on that at all. It's the reason why I cry every night. It's okay.
Oh, my gosh. Well, of course, plenty of sports talk to be had with these three guys, but we'll talk about more. Let's jump into the show. Of course, this is the Kind of Funny XCast. We post each and every Thursday at 6 a.m. West Coast, Best Coast time on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And of course, on podcast services around the globe. If you like what we do here at Kinda Funny, please consider supporting us with the brand new Kinda Funny membership available over on patreon.com/kindoffunny. And of course, on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can get our shows ad-free live as we record them. And of course, your daily exclusive content brought to you by one Greg Miller. So please check that out. We always like to thank those who support us over on Patreon, just like our Patreon producers for the month, Delaney Twining, Kieran Hovo Sapien, and Carl Jacobs. Thank you so much for your support. This week, the Kinda Funny XCast is sponsored by Factor, but we'll talk all about that in just a little bit. Khalif, I'm going to go back to you because you were talking about you've been playing some games. Summer's in the air. We're trying to get outside a little bit, but we also want to sit on the couch and play some good games. What you've been playing that you can talk about?
Oh man, I have been getting my Magic Archer on with Dragon's Dogma. A bunch of that. I've been playing a ton of that. Playing, you know, formerly known as Paragon, but playing the new version of it called Predecessor, both on my Xbox and on my PlayStation. Getting my MOBA on in that respect. And yeah, I've been jumping back into Fallout. I feel like everybody who's watched the TV show has been jumping back in. I've gone back into 4. To get my fill over on that side. I've been wanting to play 76 with people, but some people in this room and on this podcast don't play with me because I would like to have people to play with. Damn. But it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun getting back into that world after watching the show and feeling all of that good Bethesda goodness that has been in that space for a minute. So lots of stuff on the plate right now. It just feels like there's not enough time as usual to play everything, but lots of good stuff in the mix.
Do you want to tell us what Fallout you chose after watching the series?
Four is the one that I kind of lean back into. 76 takes a little bit more effort to get back into if you haven't really, if you've lapsed from playing that. Like, I played that at launch when it wasn't really great, and then have kind of come back in and out of it from time to time. But now with the show having been such a huge success and really like reigniting that spark, I have to spend some actual time learning what the systems are and how to get back into it in a real way. But 76 is a lot of fun from what people are saying now, which has been good to hear.
Harris, I mean, I'll just might as well kick it to you. Is 76 fun?
Yeah. I'm actually having a lot of fun with it. But I do, before I jump into that, do want to say it's interesting that you went to 4 now. I sure you know that the update is about to come out. I'm purposely waiting until the new next-gen update comes out so I can check it out that way and play then. And I've talked about it before, but I never gave 4 a real shot. You know, I played it super early, and then I kind of was like, I don't think this is for me, and I moved on to other stuff. But I keep hearing it's worth playing. I know, Barry, you even talked about it last week. I have to get past a certain point or meet a certain character.
And, Nick Valentine, one there of you the go. Best mm-hmm. video game characters.
Holy so boy. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to wait till the update comes out, and I'm planning to jump in on console instead of PC just so I can check it out on console, because I don't think 4 has cross-save. I don't think it does. Mm-hmm. So I think I got to make a choice similar to 76 on which platform I'm going to play on. So I think I'm just going to do it on the Series X and play there. But 76... I'm enjoying it. Obviously, you had Holly on last week. You know, we're talking about it with her because I know she plays a lot. You know, I was like, help me understand the game. But I've actually not officially jumped in with anybody and jumped into a co-op session to play. I've been playing with randoms just that I've met on the Wasteland. And it's been a blast so far. I feel like I finally have my footing and I understand the mechanics of the game and how it works, how the economy works in the game. Obviously the stats and, you know, going on different side missions, main missions, doing public events, things like that. It's been a lot of fun. I've truly been enjoying it. I even posted a screenshot yesterday. I finally found some power armor on a side mission. So now I have power armor. So now I'm just peacocking around West Virginia because I'm feeling all good. Even that, I mean, you got to manage the power. It's like a lot of different things in it. Even just getting power armor doesn't instantly make you a god in the game. So, yeah, like I said, I'm having a lot of fun. But the one story that sticks out of my head, it was so funny. I even called Danny like after it happened because I had to tell Danny and Rihanna because I was just dying laughing. I'm playing solo and all of a sudden I'm hearing, hey, help. Help. And I'm like, what? Where the hell is this coming from? It was someone that had just started playing. He was brand new. He was like level 2 or level 3. And he was like, hey, help me. I don't know what I'm doing. Please help. Help. And I was like, hey, man, I don't know what I'm doing either. Come on. Come with me. And we just went on like we actually did like an event together, and I did share a few stem packs with him, and I told him my limited knowledge on what to do. But yeah, he just followed me around for probably like a good hour and a half, where and he was just asking me all these questions that I didn't know the answers to at all. So I'm like, I think you do this, I think you do that, hey, let's go check this out, kind of thing, right? And that's kind of the beauty of it, where you get to do things like that. And I don't think I told this one last week, but when I first started playing, and this one cracks me up, I know I tweeted about it. So when I first started playing, a guy comes up and he was like level 130 something crazy. He comes up to me and weighs me down. And I was like, okay, cool. He's in power armor. He gets out the power armor and then he just shows off. He puts a whole bunch of different power armors like in a row. And I'm thinking, hey, is this what they're talking about? Is he finna share one of these with me? I got like all excited. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. He's gonna give me power armor already. Nope. He just wanted to show it off to me. He put them all in a row, looked at me, gave me a thumbs up, put them all back, got in his power armor and dipped. I was like, oh,
that's awesome.
Didn't share nothing with me. He just wanted to show it to me. That was it. But overall, people have been so friendly. I mean, that's probably the biggest compliment that I can give it. Like, I've gone to some of these camps, like people to give me grief because I haven't set up my own camp yet. But I've gone to some of these camps where people are like level 200. Like, you can tell they've been playing this game for a long ass time. And the camps they have created and the items that they have in there is just insane. You know, the base building that they've been able to do. So I trust me, I get it. And like I said, I'm still not high enough level to do a bunch of these crazy missions, but I've tagged along in a few. And then, you know, you get the experience and people will throw you some items here or there and you're able to get those. It's been fun. It's been a lot of fun. I get the appeal of it now, but I also understand the frustrations that people must have been having in the early days when they didn't have NPCs. I can't even imagine playing this game without NPCs. It wouldn't even make sense to me to not be able to do it. But the game's in a good place right now. And it's cool to see. I think the Steam charts had like record numbers of people that were playing on Steam charts, things like that. But I get it. I get the appeal. I am having a lot of fun with it. And my only thing, like I was even talking last week, is just a time investment that you would truly need to put into it to really get, you know, to the higher levels and get more into the end game of things that you'll be able to do. I mean, we're in a position where we're trying to play 1,000 different things at once. So I just don't know if I have the time that I really need, but I definitely see me coming back to it, you know, from time to time and checking it out because, West Virginia, they built a cool little world there and doesn't seem like it's going to slow down anytime. My only other thing, which isn't really a nitpick because it is a live service game and you had to monetize it, I see all this cool shit in the Atomic shop. And I'm like, man, I would love to get that. I was like, oh, wait, they want me to spend a bunch of money on this. I don't know if I want to do that. But they also had a ton of free stuff. Like you go like every day, there's something free that you can go in there and grab. So I definitely, first thing I do when I log in is I go to the Atomic shop and I grab some of the free stuff that they have in there. But this is, again, where you can see these people with these elaborate camps, like, I'm talking years of investment getting some of this stuff and building it out. It's really crazy to see. But I'm having a good time. Definitely having a good time. Highly suggest people go check it out for themselves. And again, the one other nitpick that I will point out, and we do know that Phil Spencer shares this same concern, no cross-play, cross-save in the game. That's my only thing. You got to pick. The platform you pick is the platform you're on. And I know a lot of people are on PC, but I purposely chose Xbox because I knew I wasn't going to have a ton of time to play as much as I wanted. And I wanted to check out the console experience for it. So I've been on Xbox, but that community has been great too. But it is unfortunate that the PC, the Xbox, and the PlayStation crowd can't all just play together. And you can hop between platforms depending on where you are. I do remember someone saying that Pete Hines had posted like some years ago about it was going to be very hard to be able to pull it off, you know, from a development standpoint to get that functionality. So I don't know if it's actively being worked on. I don't know if it's even feasible for 76, but I would love to see it happen down the road.
Okay. I like that. As someone who jumped in very early, there was a lot of holotapes and it was very quiet and very empty. Pairs, so I know without NPCs it was a different vibe. Yeah. It was a different feel for sure. I love that you bring up the item shop because I wanted to know, did you jump in and buy any of those microtransactions? It is always alluring and interesting, the idea of like getting Fallout power armor, different decals and looks.
Yep.
Of course, mm-hmm. Buying all the home goods because base building is a big factor of that game and they want you to really make it your own, and you can gather and make your own craftable equipment, but they also want you to buy stuff. And so I was wondering if you gave them 20 yet, you know?
Yeah, not yet. I do think I, and again, it just comes down to time, but I can see the appeal to want to do it. Like I said, you go to some of these camps, you're like, God damn, what some people have done. So I understand the appeal. And if you're really invested in the game, of course, you're going to want to support the game. You're going to buy some of those items there. But just from a I'm just playing it standpoint, the community itself has just been extremely generous with stuff. They just people every time I go in, somebody's just giving me something. Every time I go in, which has been really cool.
Khalif, you brought up Predecessor, and I want to switch gears and talk about that really quick because
yep.
I am interested. I know that you brought up the game before that. What was that called again?
Paragon.
Paragon. I remember seeing you play that all the time, you and Andrea Renee, and then I see you all the time on my friends list playing this Predecessor game, and I didn't know it was a MOBA. I need to know all about this because, yeah, Smite 2 is right around the corner. I mm-hmm. am a big League of Legends and Dota kid, right? So it's like, what is up with this? Is it a fun console experience? What's up with this game?
Yeah, so when Paragon died a couple of years ago, by you know, Epic had this other small game that they decided to work on called Fortnite. And it wound up
that flopped.
Yeah, I don't know what that happened. I don't know what happened to that. And at that time, Paragon was the game that they were working on, and Fortnite was kind of a side project, and they were still doing Save the World and all that kind of stuff. And it wound up happening that Fortnite blew up, and they were like, "We got to shift all the resources to Fortnite." And Paragon kind of died on the vine. It had a pretty decent in terms of community that was fairly active. It was a game that me and Andy played a whole bunch of, and a whole bunch of other industry folks were on often. But it's a third-person MOBA, you know, behind the character MOBA in the same way Smite is. And it had all these great characters that were in the mix. But when it passed, when it passed away, when it died, for the ones. When it died, the Epic wound up giving away all of the assets to the community. They said, well, we're not going to use this, and it was an unprecedented move. They kind of gave all the assets away and said, if you want to make your own games, you can do that. So you saw a lot of kind of imitation games pop up in China, in the same space as Predecessor. There was another game called Overprime that was kind of a more fast version of the game. So then they wound up putting that game on PS5, and then most recently they opened it up to the Xbox community as well, and they like basically doubled the player base immediately, which was great because it was a game that needed more people to play it. And now they're kind of in open beta on both platforms, and it's been really fun to just have so many people really dig into a game that I've loved for a long period of time and was really hoping that it was going to get another life in some form or fashion. So it's been a lot of fun. I would say, Mikey, if you ever want to get some games in, like, let me know. We'll definitely get some games in. Cause I think you'll, once you find the nuances of it and you kind of understand how it plays, I think you'll have a fun time with it for sure.
Yeah. You're scratching that itch for me. And, you know, as someone who really loves League of Legends, I've loved those offshoots that you find and really attach yourself to. I think of Pokemon Unite on Nintendo Switch and how much fun I had with that and the desire to find that MOBA-like experience on console. And Smite did that for me. I thought Smite was really well done to that third person behind the character of like, oh, we're back in the laning phase. It feels just like a MOBA, but it's a different view and a different perspective. And you have my interest on this, and I'm looking at the map right now, Khalif. It looks exactly like League. Three lanes, multiple towers to get down to the inhibitor. Like, that seems pretty cool, Khalif. What about the characters, microtransactions? Like, what does that look like on being able to unlock and have everything at your arsenal?
They've done some interesting things in terms of microtransactions and skins, which is the main thing that you want in that game so far. Like, for characters, you have your rangers, you have your tanks, you have your support characters, you have your, you know, classic lane, off lane, mid lane, you know, dual lane stuff. But the skins is kind of where it's at. The thing that was cool about when Epic was in control was that you knew you were going to get super high quality skins at multiple levels. And now the new studio, Omida, that's taking it up, they've decided that not only are you going to get some of those older skins in the mix, but they're doing some actual retcon, I wouldn't say retconning, but kind of rethinking of what those characters are and the way that their ethos and the way that their lore has kind of come together and giving them new skins that they are creating in their studio, which I think is probably like 50 or 60 people. I think they're in the Philippines. I think I'm getting that information right. But I think if you are a person who is really competitive, and if you are a person who loves that three lane, you know, short, almost ARAM kind of feel that you would get in a League of Legends game, this is a really dope game for you because it has a lot of variety in terms of classes, has a lot of variety in terms of abilities and cool stuff that you can do. And what you wind up seeing is all these permutations of builds that really make your character feel different because of the card system that they use and the item system that they use for building out your character. Each game will play a little bit different because you're thinking about matchups, thinking about, you know, who else is playing in that match in terms of, you can't really tell if folks have been, you know, playing for a long time or not, if they're rookies or not. You'll see it as soon as you get into the game though, because you'll see how people are playing. But it has been super fun to get that competitive itch scratched in that way. And I get salty because there's a lot of people who don't know what they're doing. And I'm like, come on, man. What are you doing over there? We need you to be reasonable in this game. And you're playing in my face. So it's a lot of fun to get into that. So, yeah, definitely check that out.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. 35 characters. That's a good depth of a roster right there to be able to have some freshness and different characters to choose from. Cleef, mark me down. You, me, and my buddy Washi, we're going to play this one night. I'm all about that. Any desire for Smite 2?
Oh, I'm big on Smite.
Okay. Like,
I missed playing Smite for a while because I was kind of in this lane. But I'm hearing some great stuff about the skins on that side. I know there's been some controversy about, you know, not being able to pull in your old skins from before because the technology has been upped on Unreal 5. And, you know, I thought they gave a pretty good, you know, a reasonable answer to that question of like, you know, Unreal 5 is much different in terms of, you know, the robustness that you can get in terms of the characters. So I'm excited for it. I've just been waiting for a code. Whenever that thing is going to drop, I'm waiting for it. I'm like, come on, y'all, hook me up.
Okay. I like that. I'll mark that down. I like that.
This episode is brought to you by Factor. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. A ton of us here at Kinda Funny have been so thankful for Factor since we've been in the new studio, and you can too. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Head to factormeals.com/kindoffunny50 and use code kindoffunny50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code kindoffunny50 at factormeals.com/kindoffunny50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Guys, I want to talk about a fun topic that I saw on Twitter this week, and it got me thinking. We talk about microtransactions. We talk about the current state of video games at $70, free to play, early access. How do you support the devs? Oh my gosh, the tippy top is getting rich and all these poor people are getting laid off. What's going on? And, you know, there was an interesting conversation from Mike Ybarra, who is formerly the president of Blizzard Entertainment. So I thought, man, if this guy's talking, he's got something to say, and this is interesting. So I want to read out the tweet and the thoughts and hear what you guys think about this, because I think it's a very interesting conversation to have in the video game space. And so here's what it says. I've thought about the idea for a while as a player since I've been diving into single-player games lately. When I beat a game, there are some that just leave me in awe of how amazing the experience was. At the end of the game, I often thought, I wish I could give the folks another $10 or $20 because it was worth more than my initial $70. And they didn't try to nickel and dime me every second. Games like HZD, God of War, so Horizon Zero Dawn, God of War, Red Dead Redemption 2, BG3, Elden Ring, etc. I know $70 is already a lot, but it's an option at the end of the game I wish I had at times. Some games are that special. I know most will dislike this idea. By the way, I realize we are tired of tipping in everything else, but I view this different from a pressure to tip type scenario many face and give feedback on. So, you know, I want to talk about that. Tipping in video games, tipping developers after a great experience with their games. Where do you two stand on that? And Paris, I'm going to kick it to you, a man with a family, a man who's buying a lot of games, a lot of things in his life. You know, are we tipping developers after their video games?
So this is an interesting one, and I was aware of the comments, but I hadn't actually seen the full context of it until you just posted it right now. So I still think, even after seeing all of it, it's very tone deaf coming from Mike.
Okay.
And I mean that in the most respectful way. I get what he means, because of course there's been some amazing experiences that in games that I've had over the years that are well worth the price of admission, if not more. It's just the timing of him saying this now, when we're in an era of we're seeing all these layoffs across the industry, we're seeing the shift in business strategy. There's even the question of, Are games too expensive now at $70, so people aren't buying them as much now, right? You know, there's a lot that already goes into this. And of course, I'm always going to sympathize with the development teams. They're the ones that are way smarter than me that are creating these experiences that I love so much. So this isn't me saying, well, I'm against tipping a developer. I'm actually for, how about we pay them more so that we don't have to tip them? That's what I would say in this scenario. Whereas as a consumer, don't put that, and he wasn't trying to put pressure on people, but it comes off as trying to put pressure on people is the way I'm reading it, where you're almost trying to put it on the consumer that we need to monetize it even more than we already have for these developers. How about let's increase their salaries by 10 or 15% so that they can have a livable wage and they can live more comfortably and they can get the bonuses and all these things that we would want. I'm trying to not get too started on this, but I don't like that comment coming from him, if that makes sense. And I would say the same thing if that was Phil Spencer saying it, if it was Sarah Bond saying it, if it was Herman Hulse saying it, etc. Miyamoto on down the line, you know. I don't think they should be the ones saying, hey, we're already charging $70 for these games. Give us a little more. Give our dev teams a little more, because we made this awesome game that was above and beyond, right? So then what about the games that don't get a tip? That wasn't good enough? So your game wasn't good enough that we're tipping, but this one was. It's like I said, I get where he's trying to go. But me not even actually reading the comments directly and just getting the peripheral comments about what he said tells me that most people do not agree with what he was saying. The idea of it, I get. But the reality of it is, we're already spending $70 on these things, man. We're already having games that you spend $70 and then they're telling you to go buy a battle pass. And then even the ones that are free to play, you're having battle passes and these other monetization efforts already that, I don't know, asking us to tip even more. Like I said, it comes off as tone deaf in my personal opinion.
It's a very interesting one, Paris, of like, I'm right there with you. And I like where he's trying to, when he's in the comments of the Twitter of like, well, you know, let's bring this a little bit deeper than that. I think some people brought up like, hey, if I really enjoy a game, I'm willing to gift that game to a friend. Or maybe I'm more inclined to buy something off the store. And I have definitely done that many of times. You know, I have found that, hey, I like this game. Yeah, what's $20 in the microtransaction store? I'm pretty sure Khalif Adams, that's not going to Becky, John, James, who are on the dev team. I'm sure that's not, they're never going to see my 20, right? In reality. But I at least pretend like that's helping the team, right? And then there are many occasions where I like this game. I want to play with my friends. I buy two or three copies to play with my friends in hopes that we'll all play it. And I hope that's doing good, but I don't think that's actually being seen all around the company. But in my mind, I like to see that. And I thought that was a fun, interesting one to that. But yeah, like you said, Paris, I didn't vibe with the whole tipping because it still feels like that's only going to be seen by five people and then they're exactly not the people that need it.
And Kai, I want you to pop off, but I do want to get this other point in going off of what Mike just said. The best way that I can support a game that I truly love, that I felt above and beyond, is I'm going to talk about it nonstop. I'm going to tell everybody and their mama, go get this game. Hey, man, you, man, we got to play this game. You got to get up on this. We got to go buy it. I'm going to encourage more people to want to actually buy this game versus now me having to actually spend more game to support the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really weird layer to kind of like bring to a conversation with a lot of the points that you added, Paris. We are in one of the most trepidatious spaces within the video game industry right now, where so many studios are closing, so many developers are out of work, and to then ask devs and teams to get on the digital poll for tips feels even sillier, because it's not a thing that anyone on those teams, speaking from a dev perspective from the times that I've worked on games, that there's work that goes along with that too, right? You know, if you're running a live service game, you're already thinking about other ways that you can lengthen the time of people playing your game for as long as possible, so you can continue to have success and build the next thing that you want to build in that space. So the whatever that money would wind up being, you'd have to figure out a way to incorporate that into the dev process in a weird way, and ask developers to then potentially be more connected to the public, which is already problematic in a lot of different ways, because a lot of times the public doesn't represent or doesn't really understand how to deal with the developer community in a reasonable way. We've seen continued layers of harassment across so many conversations around video games and stuff that people do like. They still don't support it. We've seen games that are in the mix right now that are huge games that are not selling in the ways that we had hoped. So there are so many different ways that you can show your support for a studio, for a developer, and for the folks who are making the games that we love. And tipping just feels like a pittance in comparison to all the other things that we actually could do in terms of making that developer community stronger and more resilient. So it's just a weird take from Mike on that respect, but I get that that's the grasping at straws to figure out some ways to make it feel a little bit better.
Like I said before, I think his heart was in the right place.
Yeah.
I just think coming from him in the position that you have been in this industry for a long time, it's a very tone deaf take, because again, I'm gonna just keep this a buck. What I've seen a lot of comments would be, well, how about you take a pay cut if you want to support the devs more?
Yep.
That's what people are going to say. How about you forego your bonus or whatever? And again, this comes into the real world of where we are right now in this industry, where we're seeing some super talented people get put on the street, get laid off, because where they, you know, and look, Phil, everyone's talked about this. I know we've repeated it ad nauseum, but the industry grew to a point, budgets exploded to where now they're tightening the purse and they're scaling back because the growth wasn't sustainable. And the people that suffer are the people that actually make the games. And that sucks. So to hear now me as a consumer, well, you need to give us even more. It's not going to fly in this current climate right now. Like I said, it just, his heart's in the right place. It's just the timing of it and being in the position that he's been in just was not the right person to represent that kind of thought, in my opinion.
Can I add one more quick point?
Oh, please, Khalif. Yeah, let's talk about it.
It's funny because it reminds me of Patreon in a weird way, right? Because if you then start to add that layer into the conversation for the player and the consumer, then expectations change as well, right? There's already a high mark that people have to hit for you to go purchase your game, especially at a $70 price point. Then what happens to the games that are $40, right? Games that are $40, you're like, oh, okay. That changes the perspective of where that game is, and not only in terms of where people think that game is going to land from a performance perspective, from a quality perspective, but then you're like, oh, well, I just spent $70 on this and I added a tip on top of it. What does that change for my expectations for what excellence is and what deserves a tip and what doesn't deserve a tip? You wind up then changing the way that the kind of conversation goes for every game in the ecosystem, right? Because we've already seen that happen with Metacritic. We've seen that happen with so many different ways that people judge games on their quality. Then you'll have that part of the scuttlebutt be like, well, damn, that game, like Paris was talking about, that game didn't get any tips. Like, is that going to be a thing that people will see publicly? Is that a thing that only happens on the back end?
Right.
Will that be a thing that has to then get reported from the companies to be like, well, we got this amount of tips from our consumer base? Because they'll have to thank the community in some form or fashion publicly to be able to do that, which then puts them in a weird position to have to then tell people about this new thing that's in the mix that they didn't have to talk about before. So I think it's a weird can of worms to jump into, and I don't think it actually benefits any of the people who we think it would potentially benefit in actual real ways. So yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, what a weird one. And I totally agree with you guys. It just doesn't feel like it would benefit the people that I would want it to benefit, right? If I was to actually tip you and be like, all right, here, Activision, here's $20. I don't believe that you're going to give it to the right people that need that money, right? And so I don't love it, but I do love the idea of celebrating games and helping uplift those games. And we've had these conversations before. I think we do a great job on the XCast and here, kind of funny, of celebrating those moments. But I do like talking with you, Paris and Khalif, of like, what are the best ways for consumers to celebrate those, right? We're not going to tip an extra $20, but are there other ways that we can help those developers and those teams maybe shine a light on their games, like you talked about, of being vocal and being that person at work or in school saying, hey, have you checked out this game? Because it's pretty dope. Like, Paris, give me a couple that come off the top of your head on ways that we can support.
I think I do it already. And look, again, I'm self-aware. Obviously, I have a big following on social media, things like that. But even if you don't, I think actively talking about the games that you enjoy. Like there was a person that I'm pretty sure both the three of us know that is working in PR and marketing. She actually tweeted today talking about, just this is from a creator standpoint, but she was like, if you don't share your passion about the games and the things that you enjoy, how am I supposed to know to grant you opportunities to be able to, you know, to engage with these games, right? But to take it from a consumer standpoint, I think the same applies. Whereas, look, if I love something, I'm talking about it. As an example, if you notice, I talk about Halo a lot. Halo Infinite. You want to know why? Because I'm loving Halo Infinite and I want everybody to know about it and I want people to come play with me. Except you, Khalif, not you. But everybody else, I want them to come play with me. I want to come play Halo. I want to talk about it. I'm playing Fallout 76 right now. I'm enjoying that. So I've been actively talking about these things. I'm not talking about it because I'm sponsored to do it or, you know, or I'm reviewing the game or anything like. These are things that I'm playing on my own personal time that I want other people to experience and enjoy. There's one game I want to so badly say that we're embargoed, but I'm enjoying the hell out of that. And guess what? Next week, I will be talking about it a lot because I want people to experience this game. You know what I mean? So to me, after you, as a consumer, after you've made that initial purchase, you've invested your time and money into this game. I think the next best way to help a game, to help a development studio, is to talk about that game on social media, talk about it at work, talk about it with your friends. Get people to understand what, well, damn, why is he so excited about this game? Well, maybe I need to go check it out too. You know, in my opinion, that's probably the best way to support a game after you've obviously already invested your money into it.
Yeah, I think to piggyback off that, you know, if you're on social media and you're a fan of a game that you're playing, one of the easiest things that you'll see that most community managers will eat up is if you say something nice about the game to them. Mm-hmm. Like it's really simple stuff. I think a lot of people try to overcomplicate what this means to folks in the industry. But if you've been to any event where developers are speaking freely about their experiences, if you just talk about the nice people in their community who have said, oh, I'm in their Discord and I've said that I like the game and I really appreciate what they've been doing and all that kind of stuff. That's what drives developers all the time. Like, of course, everyone wants to bring home a check, but like the idea that you have spent this amount of time, whatever that long period of time is, to make a game and have people respect your work and say that they appreciated the time that you spent without your family, without your friends, doing the stuff in your 9-to-5 job every day to make this one experience be something that is resonating with other people's in a hearts and minds way. That goes a long way for a lot of people to be able to say like, oh, this has worth, this has value here in this way. So that's one way. The other way is, I know people get mad about microtransactions and all those kinds of things, but they do actually matter in some ways. Like, it is a way to keep the longevity of a game going if you do appreciate what the development team has been doing. Like, again, it's not a thing where I'm saying just blindly put your money down just for the sake of it, but if you are enjoying something, The power of the wallet speaks in a real way across many, many ways. It's a metric people pay attention to. It's a thing that they're looking at. It gives them the ability to make the next thing that they want to make further down the line. So, you know, a reason that you see a lot of these studios go under, besides mismanagement and all those other things, is, you know, we live in a time where, you know, the gaming community, for reasons that are reasonable, are fickle, right? Like, you have more things to play at this point in the gaming industry and in the time of gaming being a thing than we've ever had at any point in history. So it is reasonable for you to spend your time in multiple places. But if you do find something that you really enjoy, like you spent your money and you want to decide to spend some more, don't feel guilty about being a part of what people say is the problem. You are enjoying the thing and you are spending time with it. There's no reason why you should feel guilty about spending money on a thing that you love. So there's a couple of quick things I can think off the top of my head that just makes sense in the way that we're currently kind of playing things and talking about them and enjoying them.
Yeah, I vibe with both of those guys, right? I love the word of mouth. I love sharing the enthusiasm. It does go a long way. And I challenge everybody watching and listening out there, if you're on social media, go tweet about something you love. Let us know. We want to see your enthusiasm. I'm right there with Khalif, right? I think it's very easy for people to dunk on others that are into possibly supporting or buying microtransactions, right? And I think it is simple of, like, if I'm enjoying the game and I have the means to do so, yeah, I might want to go buy a skin, or I might want to go support that by buying your DLC. I don't see any problem with that if you have the means and you're enjoying it. Even, you know, I can think of a number of indie games that are a cheap, reasonable price that I've bought for my friends that we all could share and enjoy together, right? If you have the means to do so, you can do that. You're supporting them in a certain way. But, you know, as long as you're having fun, I think is the main goal there. But I didn't... the tipping conversation is a great conversation to have with you guys and to catch the vibe of, like, what does that really look like? Is that really going to work? Would that ever happen? And I personally don't think it would. I don't think we'll ever see that ever right there. And I don't think it is the right way of doing things unless there's a proven track record of somehow the people who really deserve it need to get it right. But I don't think we'll ever live in that future, guys. Let's switch things up. Let's talk about things that we love. I want to end the show, or get towards the end of the show, with a couple of things that are really positive, some fun things. Of course, I want to start off with a nice little icebreaker in the middle of the show, coming from Xbox, since we're talking about things that we love. Xbox tweeted out earlier today, which game made you fall in love with gaming? And I know we've talked about this before, but I always enjoy it because I get to hear cool stories from you, Paris Lily. You know that. I love getting to know you and all your history. And so I'm going to challenge you and Khalif.
I can't wait for both of them to say Pong.
I'm going to ask them both.
So fucking old.
I want
one game that made you fall in love with gaming.
Wow.
And one game from
Xbox.
Wait
till I'm in the studio next.
Wait till I'm in the headlock.
I'm going to make a trip to the studio to come get you, Barry.
So I'll start off with our guest, Khalif. But yes, the icebreaker is, which game made you fall in love with gaming? I would like one game that you love. Doesn't have to be Xbox related. And then we'll bring it back to Xbox. You give me one Xbox game that made you fall in love.
Pong is the game that I was going to say. Honestly, the first game that I really, like, pulled me in and got my attention in a real way was Mortal Kombat 1, and that was in the arcades. So, like, because I'm old, as somebody in the studio said, I know who it is. The arcade experience was such a huge seminal part of loving games for me that it was that first initial thrust of being like, oh man, I can do this thing that I love with people around me and get that energy that you didn't get because we didn't have online gaming when I was growing up. So it wound up being this thing of go to the arcade and see all the new stuff. So it was like Hard Drive-In. It was like Turbo from Sega when they had Turbo out. Mortal Kombat became a thing. The Grid from Midway was a thing. That was a game that I loved. And it was like, again, because you had all those track sounds, right? So all those things were coming to come up. You'd hear stuff from around the corner. You're like, oh, they got a new machine in the arcade? Oh, that's crazy. So it's stuff like that was in the mix for sure. On the Xbox side, I think it was Halo. I think it was really the beginnings of the Halo series as being a thing that, you know, far off land, you get a chance to be in a first person shooter, which was a new thing at the time. You know, what was that supposed to be? So it was a lot of different avenues for getting into the Xbox stuff. But yeah, Mortal Kombat was for sure the first game that made me love video games for sure.
Paris, what about you?
Well, Barrett, since I'm so old, the game, because I, as you were talking, I was trying to think because there's like three games that come up. So I'm going to cheat and I'm going to have to say all
Give
three.
Give me a couple.
Space Invaders.
Ooh.
That was the thing. I just love that game so much. But Space Invaders, Asteroids, and Frogger.
Oh.
So the Frogger is the one I have a vivid memory story of. So young Paris, young elementary school Paris, after school, I would walk home. See, this is back in the 80s when, you know, they used to let us do stuff like that. You can't do that stuff now. But I would walk home, and the shopping center that was across the street from the elementary school, Dalatia's Pizza, I remember it vividly. I would go in there, and they had Frogger. And let me tell you, that was my after-school thing, like, every day. I would go in and I would play Frogger, and I just loved it. And like back then, because I didn't have an Atari 2600 yet or anything like that, it was these arcade games, like you go to the 7-Eleven, things like that. Those were where I would play games, which actually sparks two more stories. I'll tell super quick because this is all in that early 80s era. So when Pac-Man came out, that was transformative. Absolutely transformative for me, be able to play Pac-Man. And I would get in trouble because going to school, I would go to the 7-Eleven and I would spend all my lunch money playing Pac-Man. And my mom was not too happy about that. But play that, me and my buddies, we'd all play that, go play Pac-Man. So much so, we took a family vacation and went to the, I guess this was 1982, but went to the World's Fair in Knoxville, Tennessee. And on this road trip to go to the World's Fair in Tennessee, we stayed, and again, these are vivid memories. I know specifically it was a Sheraton hotel, but we stayed at the hotel. And back then, they used to have arcade machines in the hotels, right? Mm-hmm. Go in, and who knows where we were. I don't know what state we were in. It was in the South somewhere. But we go in, and I go into the arcade, and there's this game with this gorilla and this dude that has a hammer, and you'd have to go up, and you do the jump thing. It was Donkey Kong. That was my first time ever seeing Donkey Kong. And I just remember loving that. But to continue the story, the 82 World's Fair, they had a Pac-Man Expo there. I was in heaven. And I'm doing air quotes, got lost at the 1982 World's Fair because I went to the Pac-Man Expo and I spent my entire time there. And my parents were worried sick because they literally couldn't find me in front of thousands of people. They didn't know where I was. And my sister eventually figured it out. I was like, oh, I bet he's playing Pac-Man. And that's where I was. So those were those early days for me that cemented gaming. Just loved it. I always have those memories and just love that because you don't have that now. It's completely different feeling now with gaming because everything's console, online. But back then you had to go to the arcades to be able to play those games.
Thanks to both of you for proving my point.
I know. Hey, I just embraced it.
But Barrett, before you go, Barrett, it feels like when Paris was talking about his story and said the World's Fair, I was just expecting a voice to come out the background and be like, and now, see, you gotta go to the new World's Fair to go play the Pac-Man game. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. He's gonna get after both of you, just so you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the World's Fair, the only place where you can play Pac-Man. Step right on.
Being serious for a second, it was those early arcade games. Like I heard the ones already named, but like Galaga or Zaxxon, Defender. Yeah. You know, just going to the arcade, playing those. Because again, just story time, and I'll make it quick. The thing that I would do on the weekends was I would bug my mom. She'd give me $10. And I would get on the city bus with a transfer, and I go to Tyrone Square Mall. I go to Aladdin's Castle on a Saturday with $10 worth of quarters, and I would be in there all freaking day playing all their arcade games back in the 80s. It was the best. It was the best. It was such a great. And again, I used to do this by myself, which there's no way in hell I'd let my kids do something like that now. But I have my buddies at the arcade and we all know each other and you know, we're playing this game and you know, and like you're talking about the fighting stuff. Look, I know I'm talking a lot and I apologize.
No, keep going.
Now it's high school Paris. High school Paris. So I've never told the story on here, but I know I told it recently. So my buddies and I, was I in 10th, 11th grade up in there somewhere? At lunch, we would leave campus, which we weren't supposed to do back then. And we would go down the street to this convenience store, whatever it was called, right? They had the original Street Fighter in there. Mm-hmm. So we would go and play the original Street Fighter during our lunch and sometimes a lot later than our lunch during that time, right? So I tell this story because whenever we would leave campus and go do this, we would always cut through this alley behind this convenience store, right? So one day, we're doing this, we're walking through the alley, and there's like a laundromat door, like the back of it, right? All of a sudden, the door blasts open, and I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida. The high school I went to was in Gulfport, Florida. The Gulfport police, it was like a sting operation, comes blasting out the door. The cop car pulls up in the back of the alley, and we got arrested because someone called the cops on us for cutting through this alleyway. We got arrested. I had to go to the Gulfport jail, and I'll never, and they put us in the back, handcuffs and everything, and I sat on the handcuffs because I'd never been arrested or anything before, and the handcuffs hurt, right? They put us in the holding cell. I had to call my mom. My mom was so pissed. She refused to get me.
No.
And my grandmother had to come and get me out of jail. I will never forget this for the rest of my life. And the hilarious part is it was all because we just wanted to play Street Fighter. Literally, that was it. That was my one and only time ever being arrested because of Street Fighter. It's just ridiculous. But yeah.
Funny.
That's so good, Paris. That's amazing, man.
Funny.
Oh my gosh. Give me an Xbox game. Give me something. Give me an Xbox game.
Me or Kai?
You.
Oh, that was like transformative?
Yeah, something that you love.
I mean, dude, I've said this one before. It was Combat Evolved. It was Halo.
Yeah.
It was the first thing because, you know, like I said, I went to that first E3 in 2001 where the Xbox was there. Saw it on the show floor. I was like, this buggy mess, this is never going to work, right? What is Microsoft doing a console? This is crazy. I'll be over there checking out Luigi's Mansion on the GameCube because that's what I was there for. But anyways, then, you know, later that year, Xbox comes out. I just bought it happenstance. I know I've told the story before, but I just bought it happenstance and I picked up Dead or Alive 3 and Halo at launch. And I'm just playing Dead or Alive 3. Halo sat there on the shelf for a month before I actually played it. And then I decided, yeah, let me check out Halo. And then I was like, played that campaign, blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind. It was, again, a transformative moment right there. And then obviously you start playing the multiplayer and you were doing X-Link Kai so we can play, you know, over online, all that crazy stuff, man. But Halo, that was the game. This is why, Mike, and you know the history of the show, what was I always saying before Halo Infinite came out? I was like, this cannot be okay. It's got to be great. This is the flagship. There is no Xbox without Halo. That's why I would not be as invested as I've been in the Xbox community if it was not for Halo Combat Evolved. That was the game. Absolutely. 100%.
It's crazy how it ties all three of us, right? Because Kaz said Halo. You just said Halo. Of course, mine would be Halo, right? It brings all of us together. And it is that franchise that just somehow connects the whole entire Xbox universe. And it is wild whenever you talk to someone and go, well, you know, what's the Xbox game? It's 99% of the time, usually Halo is right. And it's amazing how great that game is. All the memories from Combat Evolved to Halo 2 to Halo 3, the launches of all those and what the specialty was. Like, that was a special time back then. Yeah. I thought I'd go a little fun with it because I knew we were going to say Halo. And there is a game that I think of when I think of Xbox in those early days that made me fall in love with it. And it's the smiles that I saw my friends have. It is the camaraderie that brought the whole room around the television. It was the ultimate Khalif Adams pass the controller and give someone else a try. And that's Guitar Hero. Nothing in my life will ever be like those early Guitar Hero days where I will never forget seeing AJ have the guitar and all of us being in his basement and he would play and you would immediately see everybody's eyes perk up and the music is jamming. Now the next person wants to play. And it was so welcoming and different in the gaming world where it wasn't Halo 2, where it's like, oh, you kind of have to be good to have a good time. It was very much like anyone can do this. You can grab this guitar and figure it out. And I will never forget those early days of Guitar Hero, of how powerful that game and that just instrument, the controller, was, and how easy it was to get people on.
Ooh, there's a game that was transformative for me, not in the respect of like, I love games and Xbox is going to be the platform for that stuff, but it was an Xbox game that changed my perspective on the future of gaming, and that was One versus 100.
Oh,
One versus 100.
Yeah,
it changed the whole landscape of what I thought video games could be, because it was this thing that you literally had people from all across the world centered on these, on this one pivotal moment. You know, of course, it was instanced out because you were having multiple people playing in different places. But being a space and be like, there's a person right next to me who's going to answer a question or be a part of this experience with me, alongside me digitally, like, I mean, virtually, like, that was such a huge moment for video games. That I don't, we've had stuff that has done that, you know, throughout the time that we've been playing. But even that was a very special moment within the gaming industry and in the gaming community, of like, oh my God, we're all doing this together. That feels cool. So yeah, it was fun.
Can I give you two?
I want to give
one,
me more.
One that was transformative and one that I thought would be that isn't, and it'll be a nice transition into something else I know we want to talk about.
Lay it on me. Mm-hmm.
The original Ghost Recon on Xbox.
Come on.
That was the Xbox Live game.
Oh,
every Friday night with the crew. Oh my God, I love that. That and then Island Thunder came after that. Just love those games on Xbox Live in those early days. Now, the second one was a launch game for the Xbox 360 that I defy anybody to go watch the launch trailer for it with that music and tell me that wasn't just straight fire. I was so excited for this game. When I went to Zero Hour, it was the first game I ran to go play because I thought this was going to be... This is an IP. It was already an established IP that was now on Xbox that I thought this is going to be it, man. I cannot wait. The multiplayer, all that stuff that they were promoting. And that game would be Perfect Dark Zero.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it did not live up to expectations. And I even just remember the story. I think to this day, it's still the only game that actually was put to disc that it wasn't. It was certified after the fact because that's how hot it was coming in. But yeah, man, I had such high expectations for that game. And I even remember a couple years back, I went and played it again. And I was like, man, it was just, it didn't, the concept of it would have been great, but it, you talk about a game that needed more time in the oven. It needed more time in the oven. You could tell just in that first level that you play how rushed it was to complete, to get it out the door for launch. But that does transition me, Mike, into something that I tweeted the other day. I tweeted a picture of Joanna Dark, and I just simply said, it's time. It's time. It's time. It's time. I got it. I will be shocked if we don't see the new Perfect Dark at the showcase this year. Again, even if it's just a tease or something, but it would be very nice to see some actual gameplay from Perfect Dark at this showcase, whatever the initiative and Crystal Dynamics is coming up with. I want to see what the game actually looks like in engine. Give me a snippet of gameplay. How is it going to play out? Is it just a single player experience? Are they going to do some kind of multiplayer with it? I would love to start having those questions answered. Knock on wood. Maybe it's a 2025 game. I mean, who knows? We'll see, obviously, but going off of what Matt Booty said last June and the fact that they showed this in 2020, I believe, right, at the Game Awards. So it's time. It's just time to see whatever it is. Let's see it. So, you know, we either get our expectations super high or like, ooh, man, what is this going to be? But I want to see it now. It's a franchise that, yeah, if it came out in 2025, it'll have been 20 years since we've had Joanna Dark. It's just long overdue. It's an IP that has sat on the shelf way too long that I still think it's very viable. I think even today, Joanna Dark could be very viable. that sci-fi first-person shooter, all the different crazy weapon combinations that you could have, the potential story that they'll be able to tell. I think they're even leaning towards spy espionage with it, but whatever it ultimately is going to be, show me some Perfect Darkness, June. I got to see it. I need it.
Khalif, it's time. It's time, Khalif. We got to see this gosh darn video game, man. It's crazy.
I'm with you. I need it. I want it. I'm at the point now where I'm like, what will come out first, Perfect Dark or Splinter Cell?
do not get me started.
I know. That's the reason I said it. But I'm like, man, we're at the arms race now of like, what is going to actually drop first, a new Splinter Cell or a new Perfect Dark coming
or
back?
Or Beyond Good and Evil 2, which one?
I mean, my hair will come back before Beyond Good and Evil.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's one of those things of like, I remember so vividly when you unpacked that briefcase gun.
Oh.
And you were just like, all right, I'm going. This is going to be good. This is going to be great. And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
It just wasn't. But I'm excited for it. Again, like, I think it's a game that people would really come back to. I think there are games where the IP franchise name doesn't still have cachet. And I think Perfect Dark still has cachet. Especially for folks who were playing it in that time. Like, I thought Indiana Jones wasn't going to have cachet, and I was happily found out to be wrong. I think Perfect Dark actually has some juice left in the tank because of the nostalgia and because of the miss on the previous game, and now we have the technological leap where we can actually see some of the stuff that we wanted to in that game actually come to fruition. So I think,
yeah,
I'm excited for that part.
For all the audio listeners, I'm giving Khalif faces. I'm blown away.
Absolutely.
No, I mean, and I'm a Perfect Dark kid. Paris Lily knows this. I've been playing Perfect Dark since N64 and beyond. Yeah. And I'm still stunned that we chose Perfect Dark of all franchises to bring back. I am still stunned at this decision.
Like Paris just said, it's been 20 years.
It's insane that they were like, let's do this. That's crazy.
But see, that's the thing, Mike. And actually, perfect setup by you and Cabo, what you're saying, because one of the comments that I saw when I tweeted that out was, he was like, well, why would this current generation be excited for Perfect Dark? It's been too long. And someone commented under there, and it was the perfect reply. If the game's great, they will care.
It's true.
It comes down to, even though it's an old IP, the old people like me will care. But even the young generation that has no idea of that N64 Perfect Dark, if this one is good, and you're like, again, what were we just talking about with the tipping stuff? If a game's great, then we're going to talk about it. We're going to be excited about it. It's going to get that word of mouth. You're going to be like, man, you got to go pick up that Perfect Dark, man. Yep. Oh, man, this one level that you get to play is, like, that's what will happen. And that will get people that aren't familiar with the old IP excited about it. And Kyle, like Kyle brought up Indiana Jones. I think, like, here's how I look at it. The first three movies, iconic. The ones after, not that good. So the current generation isn't going to have that attachment to Indiana Jones like I did when I was a kid, right? So they're looking at this and they're going, that movie, really? Yeah. But if Machine Games makes an amazing game, that's all that matters. That's all that's going to matter. At the end of the day, when it comes down to this, whether we have brand awareness or not, if a game's good, a game's good. You know what I mean? Sure, mm-hmm. I might have nostalgia for it, but even people that don't, if you make a great game, they'll care about it and they'll want to go play it.
That is
the reason why I want a new Ghost. That's the reason why I want a new Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter. That's the reason I want that.
Man, Graw was so good back in the day. What a great game.
Since we're just vibing here.
We're just vibing.
Can I throw in a game that you talk about? I would love to see it never got a sequel, but was so good. And I hadn't even just tweeted about it probably a month or so ago. Do you remember The Saboteur?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, that game was so good. So freaking good.
Fantastic.
And when I was at, I don't know if you saw this person, but someone at DICE was wearing the pandemic t-shirt, which now is very ironic because we went through a pandemic, but that was a studio that made it. So good. So freaking good.
Okay.
There are a ton of those kind of smaller games that weren't really, like, didn't get critical acclaim that feels like they could potentially have a comeback in that way. Like, remember the Cell Shaded 13?
Yeah.
That was fantastic in a really interesting, weird way. Saboteur was really fantastic, like you talked about. I'm trying to think if there were any other ones that were like really, really like. Look, the Driver series was one that I saw people talking about most recently, and being like, "Oh man, what would that be like if they came back on that one?" So, and even Dead or Alive, even Dead or Alive that you talked about, like Dead or Alive, yeah. Banjo-Kazooie. I'm not even gonna listen to that. but like Dead or Alive making a comeback on the fighting game side of it, like that would be a thing that could translate into a space that hasn't seen one of those in a while. So, there's a lot of stuff in the bag that could come back and have some legs on it.
I'm right there with you guys. I'm very excited. I think it is time, Paris, to show us. There's a lot of questions of what is it? Multiplayer, single player. You got the Tomb Raider team from Crystal Dynamics. Is it just going to be a Tomb Raider type vibe? I'd love to see that third person, real story driven. That would be great. But be very interesting to see what is Perfect Dark in 2024 and beyond, because we really don't know what is going on with all of that. And it is probably time to really start showing that, but I love that, you guys. I want to give a big final shout out before we get out of here, because there was a special number shown this week, and I don't know if you saw it, because today it was announced that Sea of Thieves has now celebrated 40 million players taken to the high seas across Xbox and PC. It will soon release on PS5 and beyond, so it is wild to think that is going to only grow and get bigger and bigger. But a big shout out to Sea of Thieves for celebrating 40 million players. You got season 12 around the corner that has a whole lot of cool things coming to that sandbox. You have season 14 they talked about that is in the future, but they're going to add even more stuff. That game with Rare continues to grow, and it is a very special game. I'm excited to see people over on PlayStation jump in, and 40 million players is wild, Paris Lilly.
Yeah, absolutely it is. You know, we've had the team on the show, you know, a few times over the years, and it's, you talk about a game, but like we talk about Fallout 76, you talk about where Sea of Thieves started to where it is now. I mean, just completely transformed that game, and it's such a great sandbox to be able to jump in and play, and all the, you know, the Monkey Island, obviously Pirates of the Caribbean, all the various seasons that they've done. I mean, it's so good, really good. I think when it does come to PlayStation, and it seems like there's been a lot of genuine interest on the PlayStation side as well. But yeah, I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised being able to jump in now and play it on PlayStation. And it is full cross. It's cross play across everything. So Xbox, PC, PlayStation, everybody can play together. So it should be great. Looking forward to it.
It's going to be great. Khalif, let's end it with a smile. Where can everybody find you? What dope stuff are you doing in the universe? And let's get out of here, homie.
First of all, thank you both for having me. As always, it's always dope to be able to come here and rock with the rest of the Xbox universe. You can check out Spawn on Me every Monday. Usually around 6 a.m. PST is when a new episode will drop. We were talking about Fallout. We were talking about the localization issues that are coming up across the internet, about people getting mad about Capcom. And also, I got a chance to talk about my time when I went back home last week to New York to work with the folks over at Life Camp to talk about the work that they're doing in the inner city, making sure that games and the kids are having fun together and keeping out of trouble. So make sure you go check that out on all the feeds there. If you want to see the video version, go check it out on Spotify, and you can check out our live broadcast at twitch.tv/spawnofme, usually every Thursday night at 6 p.m. PST. Who knows what that's going to look like in the next coming days, because the playoffs are happening, so things are all moving around all the time in terms of basketball taking over in the spot, but that's where you can find most of the dope work that I'm working on in the world. So much love to everybody for that.
You're the best, Kyle. Thanks for joining us this week. Paris, always, thank you for your time as well. And all the best friends out there for tuning in and watching and listening. Thank you for your time. Go celebrate something you love. Share it with your family and friends. And we will catch you back here next week. Until then, goodbye, gamers.